Hello and welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns and this is my podcast for people who like to be in the outdoors, but for one reason or another recently have been confined to the indoors. One of the great pleasures, I think, of looking forward to a holiday or a trek or a journey is to sit down with your maps and your bits of information and work out what you're going to do and where you're going to go. And then, of course, there's the great the great joy of agonizing exactly what you're going to take with you, exactly what you're going to need. And then, of course, as everybody knows who goes on these journeys, nothing is ever quite as you expect. But my guest today is an expert on planning for those trails. He's done a lot of the really iconic walks in the British Isles and has explored Britain by camper van, by bike, and I think by just about every other means there is, really. So I think he'd be a great person to talk to about how to plan your treks and where to go. So my guest today is Martin Howe. Good morning, Martin. How are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, John.
Good. Nice to hear from you today. So you've been a long distance walking addict for quite some time. Is that right?
Yes. I mean, you could argue almost 40 years, I would imagine, something like that.
Yeah.
But most actively in the past 10 years or so, 10, 15 years.
Yeah. It gets a bit frightening when you look back over 40 years, doesn't it? So so what got you into the long distance paths? Where did you begin?
Well, I suppose that, yeah, I was very fortunate, yeah, I suppose back in the 70s that I had parents that would just sort of kick me out the door on a Friday night and tell me to go camping, and I would, you know, sort of enjoy that. And I really enjoyed the outdoor life. I suppose that was in a time when that was easy to do. Mm-hmm. But, a friend and I, age 15, which I can't really quite believe, you know, caught a bus to Pembrokeshire with the idea that we would walk the Pembrokeshire Coast Path, and it was like, you know, orange fluorescent framed backpacks, if you can remember those. A brass primer stove, a pint of paraffin, and a cotton pup tent. And yeah, we did actually walk the section, I think it was from Fishguard to round to Pembroke, and it was fantastic experience. And I think it was really, yeah, then I went to university, got a job, you know, preoccupied with work, but an opportunity came to walk again. And I thought, what am I going to do? And I said, why not go back and do that path in Pembrokeshire? So that's what I did. I think it was about 2006, something like that.
And did that sort of rekindle your interest in the long distance walking then?
Well, it did. It's almost as if I'd never forgotten. Although the boots were better, I must say.
Framed rucksacks this time.
No frame rucksack. Although I was still, perhaps carrying more than I should do. But, yeah, as soon as I was back on the trail, it was lovely. It sort of came flooding back. I was looking for the buzzards, you know, which I can remember seeing at age 15. But just absorbing that and really enjoying the walk and all the trials and tribulations that come with that, finding accommodation, somewhere to camp, these sorts of things.
That sounds great, don't it, to get back into it after all that time, you know. And you run your website is called Trail Planner, and I had a look at that, and there's some scary photographs there of your camper van winched into midair.
Yes.
So what do you try and do with that website? What's the aim of that website?
Well, I think as I started doing the walks, I just took notes. I just took a little notebook. And at the end of the day, you know, huddled in your tent whilst it's raining, I would just sit down and write notes. And over the years, I collected those. And in some cases, what I did is instead of, you know, keeping a notebook, I would write postcards back to the family and, you know, with the notes of the day, but with the picture of, yeah, where I was, stick a stamp on it, next day put it in the postbox. And when I got home, you know, there would be a stack of postcards, and that would be a record as well. So over the years, I collected all of these, and I thought, well, what am I going to do with them? And actually, in the work environment, I had to set up a WordPress website.
All
And I
right.
thought, oh, why don't I do the same thing and just put some of the notes on? So it started in a small way about 7 years ago, and then I kind of just really got into it and developed it and developed it and tried to put some good photos in it, tried to put some writing in it, and just more as a hobby more than anything else.
Oh, right, okay. Because I mean, you obviously gain considerable experience. I had a few little sneaky looks at the website, and I was the first. One of the things I looked at was what you said about the sort of kit to take with you on one of these long distance walks. Because I figured you must have sussed that out by now, you know. And one of the things that really impressed me, I have to say, was that you had you keep the burner for your little gas stove in your mug. And I thought, why have I never thought of that? So what other sort of things? I mean, it's a really difficult question to know, just how heavy to go, what kind of tent to use, all that sort of stuff. Because these are often things that you kind of have to you have to evolve over the years, don't you? It's trial and error, really. You find
It
out
is.
what works for you and what works for your particular style. So as it any particular lessons you'd like to share with us, about the kind of kit to take on long distance walks? What do you think works and what doesn't?
Well, I think you gave a hint there. It's really what not to take. And to less is more, really. And I found over the years that I didn't need half of the things that I took, and just honing it down and really being very critical. So
Right.
at the end of walks, I would come back with my backpack and literally upend it in the living room floor, which is not a good idea because you need to Hoover afterwards. But just to go through everything and be really critical about what I was taking, and just thinking that, well, if I've forgotten anything, I'm sure there's a shop nearby which I can solve that problem with. And it's also about getting the, I think they call it the big four, which is your tent, your sleeping bag, and your backpack. If you can keep each one of those under a kilo. The fourth one being your boots, actually, because they say that a 10 grams on your boots is worth 40 grams in your backpack, which I think is
Oh, right,
a
okay. Not thought of
I
that.
heard
Yeah,
that
yeah.
saying. I'm not sure if it's true. I don't find it true, but if you can keep the former three under a kilo, that's 3 kilos, and then the rest of it is relatively inexpensive. So if you invest in those three and keeping the weight down, then I found that it was the rest of it just fell in, and I wasn't too concerned about what I was going to buy. I wasn't
Yeah.
too into the gear. I'm not too into the gear, to be honest. I just take what I think's necessary and I know what works.
So you could get, I mean, I think, I can't remember, I've got a Van Gogh, it was about 2.5 kilograms, maybe. So, but you've obviously got a pretty decent tent then. Does a 1 kilogram tent keep you dry? That's the most important thing.
Well, you wouldn't think so, but yes, I think it does. I've used a Terra Nova tent, and you would think it's quite flimsy, but it definitely has worked, and it keeps the bugs out, which is important.
Well, that yeah, absolutely. We're in the middle of the midge season here, up here in Scotland right now, and keeping the midges out is like I'd say it's number one. I'd rather get wet than get midged, you know.
I agree. And I've got a slightly larger one for cycle touring, which is good because you've got somewhere to put your panniers and so on. But
Okay.
I didn't expect them to last long, but they're still going, and
That's pretty good. Okay.
I had a Mac Pack one originally, which I used for many years, but that's sort of stretched, and it's like it's you get inside, and the inner sheet is really sort of had its days, really. So, but it's got a lot of use, and I
Right,
think if
right.
things are getting used, that's the main thing, really.
Yeah, there's a sort of trade-off, isn't there, really, between something being lightweight and something being durable. And it's trying to find that happy medium for these big walks, you know?
Yes, I think what they say is it's cost, durability, and weight. Choose any two.
I see. See, you do know more about this than you were letting on. That's a really interesting concept, that. So weight, durability, and cost. That's a sort of three-sided triangle you've got to weigh up, really.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
That sounds really interesting. I noticed also, only this is purely selfish, to be quite honest, because I'm wanting to take my hot tent up to the Orkney and to some of the islands and sort of start exploring these places. Yeah, you've got a section on Orkney on your website, and
yes.
I wondered, I didn't have a chance to look at it all, but you took your camper van. You've obviously, yeah, I mean, love them or hate them, people have got camper vans these days, and they seem to be increasingly popular. I'm sure they will be. How did you come to explore Orkney by camper van then?
Well, first of all, I've had the camper for 20 years, and I think 20 years ago in Scotland, you'd hardly ever see another VW camper van.
Yeah.
But when I go now, it's very busy. But I would go to Scotland regularly in the camper van, and somebody said, "Have you ever been to Orkney?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Well, you should try it." And we went across, I think, just staying on the mainland, as they call it. I thought, this is wonderful, and just pop across to Hoy. And then I just started exploring the islands, first of all, by bicycle. So you just camp in the mainland and then take the absolutely wonderful Orkney ferries out to the islands. And you could camp, get up early, catch the ferry in the morning. Cycle around the island that you've chosen, come back in the evening, go back to the main campsite in Kirkwall, and that was just glorious. I mean, the Orkneys are—I don't really want to talk about it, to be honest, because it's like a little secret. it's not particularly busy,
no.
But it's a wonderful place to go in August because of that. You know, it's not particularly crowded, and if you can get yourself out to the remote islands. North Ronaldsay or Papa Westray, it is fantastic. You know, you arrive there on the ferry and the ferry departs, and then a silence descends,
right,
which is almost deafening. It's really peaceful and lovely.
Oh, that sounds amazing. Because the Orkney Islands, as you say, it's not just one island. It's a group of a little cluster, archipelago almost, of islands, isn't it?
And, yes, it is.
That sounds a really good way of doing it. So basically, you used your camper van almost as a base camp, and jumped on your bike, because I would imagine most of the islands are not that big. So if you get there, if you can get you over there on your bike, you can probably do most of them in a day. Is that about right?
I think yes. I mean, it depends on there is a couple which would be a challenge to do that on, but most of them, you know, sort of Westray, Sandray, Strongsay. Yes, I think most of them are sort of day trips. I think the North Ronaldsay is a bit more of a challenge.
Right.
That's the one where you see the camper van being, you know, sort of hoisted in the air,
which
I wasn't expecting. Nevertheless, hilarious. I don't actually know of anywhere else in the UK where that is still done today, in terms of a regular, you know, scheduled ferry service.
I would think not, actually. No, probably not. Because what they did was they basically, I presume, you sort of drive onto little nets, do you? And then they lift these up, and up goes your beloved camper van 30 or 40 feet in the air.
Well, I think, I got on the ferry roll on at Kirkwall.
Yeah.
And then we got to North Ronaldsay, and I was just about to get in my van. He says, "Yeah, no laddie, off you go, you know, walking through that door." And I got on the quayside, wondering what was happening. The next minute, my camper van was 20 feet in the air.
Oh, right. So you can drive on, but you can't drive off. Is that the way it works?
And they just use nets, and they're really efficient at doing it. It's almost as quickly as, you know, driving off. They're so skilled at doing it. It's a marvel to behold.
Oh, right. If somewhat disconcerting at the time to
Yes.
see your precious mobile home hoisted in midair, but when you were cycling, I mean, it tends to be a bit drafty, the Orkney Islands. Was the wind a bit of a problem, or was it okay?
It's well, yes. I mean, it can be not as bad as Shetland,
No.
which I have cycled around as well and campervaned around. But yeah, you have to take the rough with the smooth, don't you? And sometimes I find coastal walking in strong wind conditions, as long as it's safe, can be fantastic in terms of the drama of the seascape and just
Absolutely.
watching the bird life, which nonchalantly is flying through, sort of 4, 6 or seven, without a care in the world, and you just sit watching the birds navigate those conditions is fantastic.
It sounds incredible. So you survived the Orkney Islands, and one of the issues, I think you mentioned, was that of what we call wild camping these days. Do you want to,
Yes.
well, do you want maybe say what your view of what you think wild camping is, and we can talk about that, because it means different things to different people.
Well, I think first of all, to try and be as far away from a road as possible, I think.
Right.
Scotland, I think, is wonderful that they have that law, as they do in places like Norway, the Alamein's right. I can't remember if I pronounced that correctly, but I think you just have to, the leave no trace philosophy, definitely. It's really for independent small group people who are going out into the wilderness where you don't really have access to facilities of any description. You've got to, filter your own water. You can camp remotely. And I think, in Scotland, that's wonderful. In the rest of the UK, then I think as long as you're stealthy enough and considerate enough, and you do, I found that if I do ask farmers, generally permission is given. In fact, it's a starting point of a good conversation because you can talk about your journey. Coastal routes are a bit more difficult, obviously, because it's just a narrow coastal strip, and you don't have so many options. But I tend to walk inland, find a
So are
way.
you talking about, obviously, when you had your camper van on Orkney, for example, was that mostly using the sort of formal campsites?
Yes, I mean, in the camper van, I think I always use campsites where
Right,
they're
right,
available.
right. Okay.
If I'm in a situation, well, actually, I just stop and ask locals, and I said, where's the, we might have been on Unst in Shetland.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
just stopped and asked the local. He said, no, the youth hostel, there's a youth hostel there, was closed. He said, but the, he said, why don't you just try going down this road? And at the end of it, there's a nice little car park. You
Right,
won't be
right.
disturbed. So that was just sort of an endorsement from a local. But I think just parking up on a main road or in particularly popular beach spots, I'm not sure I really, endorse that. I think you just have to be considerate.
Yeah, it's about considerate camping, and I think, I'm sort of at the other end of this now, because I've got a hot tent, so I've got
Yeah,
a
I've
hot
seen
tent
that. Yeah.
and a cart, you see.
Yeah.
And the plan is to, but like you, I like to get away from the road.
Yeah.
So if you can, it depends how far you feel that you can haul the damn thing, you see.
Yeah,
But
with walking, it's easy, isn't it? As cycling, pushing your bike down to, somewhere, it also works very well. But generally, I only wild camp when I walk. I don't wild camp generally with the camper.
No, I mean, it's well, but my experience, to be honest, and I know there's been a lot in the press about the pressure of wild camping in certain areas of Scotland, but actually my experience is that there are a lot of people using their camper vans in certain areas, like on the NC 500. But actually, if you avoid Glencoe or Glenmore in the Cairngorms, you avoid the honeypot areas. There is basically everywhere is still pretty empty, and as long as you're responsible, And you know, as you say, you practice the principles of leave no trace. All you leave is a patch of flattened grass. Then really, you know, fortunately in Scotland, I'm sure there'll be no change in the legislation here. We'll still be able to do that. But I really feel sorry a lot of the time for the folk in England. And I know you can camp. But I don't like the idea of you know what they call stealth camping, isn't it? When you've got to hide, I think you know it just seems an anathema to me that you've got to do that. So what do you think? Now maybe we can talk about your the book that you've written. I presume it must be written by now. Tales from the Big Trails, and then this is over 40. A bit like my own book, which The Last Hill Walker looks back over 40 years in the hills. To tell me about that book. What have you written in there?
Well, I suppose I started the blog and the Trail Planner website.
Right.
And then I've always been an avid reader, and I met somebody on the trail who said, "Why don't you write about it?" And they said to me, "Writing is like an intense form of reading." And so
I never thought of that before.
I really caught my imagination. So I came home and I got all my notes out and piled them up, and I read them again, and I thought, okay, I mean, there's only one way to do this, and that's to make a start. So I just wrote a couple of chapters and then started writing, you know, just shortened versions on the blog. And then I wrote three or four chapters, and I just thought, well, I don't know what that's like. Let's send it to some friends. I've got some good friends who are proper writers or avid readers. And they were very kind in terms of their feedback. So they said, why don't you include, be more descriptive, include some dialogue. And then slowly, I rewrote them again and then sent them to different people. And then they suggested a few more things and we came back to it. So, I thought, okay. And then, you know, one chapter became three and then three became five and then five became 19.
Right.
And I finished it. And I thought, okay, that's, think about publishing it. But I went back through it several times and polished it. And I sent it out about 18 months ago. And I got no reply at all. It's quite difficult, as I'm sure you might know. Nothing. And I thought, okay, let's leave it. And then I sent out another set of notes just before Christmas. And at the same time investigating self-publishing.
Sure.
And I was just about to self-publish. In fact, I was just about to commission a book cover for the self-publishing. And I got a wonderful email from Vertebrate.
Oh, right.
And they said, we like your book. We'd like to publish it. And I almost collapsed on the floor, I think. But then things started moving quite quickly. And I spoke to them and it was quite unusual for them to have a complete, you know, manuscript that was finished.
Right, okay.
So, that was a wonderful feeling, achievement to,
absolutely.
Published. And we've just spent, this year putting it all together, getting the proofreading done, all the things that I'm sure you know, particularly, getting permissions for a lot of the poetry, which I came across during walking,
which
is very meaningful to the walk. And often you come across something, you read it, and it's in your head for a couple of days. I put that into the book as well.
So what does the book deal with? Is it specific walks or is it specific areas?
the big discussion, originally the book was called Follow the Acorn.
Okay.
The Acorn, but I thought, maybe that doesn't work because I know in Scotland they use the thistle, the white thistle. So it wasn't, it just became a working title. I also said it was 19 chapters, 19 national trails.
Right.
And then, then we get into a complex political discussion about what a national trail is. But I think if it's in a capital N, capital T, then it's the England and Wales, which is, my definition is anything that's central government funded, be it from Scottish government, Welsh government, or Westminster. And but that was the definition. But essentially, it's what I call the 19 national trails, and that was the definition used by the Long Distance Walkers Association. And so I just thought, yeah, I've walked one, let's do another, which was the Ridgeway. I thought, no, that's, then I had a break in work.
Right.
Where I actually, you know, finished a piece of work. And I thought, okay, I'm going to make a decision in my life to do freelance work instead of full-time work to give me the time to go walking. And then I did the Southwest Coast Path, which is the biggie. And just developed it there. So it's really, I set out to walk the 19 national trails. Well, it became an ambition to do that.
Right, right, okay.
And therefore 19 chapters. So all the names, you know.
So each chapter covers a walk like the Pennine Way or the, is it the Southern Uplands Way? Things like that. Is that right? Is that what you've done?
Yes, yeah, all the big ones, Thames Path, Southwest Coast Path, the Norfolk Coast Path, Cleveland Way, Yorkshire Wolds Way, Pennine Bridle Way, Hadrian's Wall, West Highland Way, Great Glen Way, Speyside Way. Have I got more? Almost.
You've got most of them there anyway. So yeah, it's really your insights and your experience in walking these routes and the kind of nonsense that goes on with yes. these sort of walks. Is that basically what your book is about?
Yes, the people I meet, what it feels like to actually walk the trail.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
the trials and the tribulations, the good days, the bad, the what I observed. What I see, written in a sort of, hopefully I'd like to think, you know, accessible format. Yeah. So the purpose of the book is really to inspire others to do the same.
Right. I think that's really what it's about. I mean, there's lots of guidebooks, but I think particularly for people who are getting into this kind of walking, it's great to have books that sort of inspire you and talk about the experiences, both good and bad, I guess, that people have on walking these trails. And that perhaps prepares you more than anything else for what that experience is going to be like, I think.
Yes.
So your book is published on, am I right, the 2nd of September?
Yeah, it's available for pre-order now.
You can pre-order it right now. I didn't realise that. Okay.
From Amazon. It's on Amazon. Yes, it comes. I haven't seen a paper. That's what my only objective in writing it was, for one day, you know, a box would arrive at my front door and open it, and I could actually hold a book that I've written that's got an ISBN number on it. And that for me was job done.
Oh no, it's a great achievement, great sense of achievement to see. My experience is a book becomes a book somehow when you see the cover, because I'm not a graphic designer, and somebody else has to produce the cover for you, and you think, bloody hell, I've done a book, you know, and that's quite a sensation. But it sounds fascinating, so I'm sure it'll be a really interesting read. Thanks very much for talking to me, Martin. I really enjoyed our little discussion, and all the very best of luck with your book.
It's been an absolute pleasure, John.
Thanks very much, then. You take care.
Yeah, thanks for now. Bye.
Bye.